Later this month, the Power of Music Festival in downtown Bentonville will bring in musicians and songwriters to perform and discuss their work. There will also be panels devoted to elements of the music business that are not as familiar to most of us as the singer or the band on stage. Licensing, promotion, and the knack of getting an original song included in a movie are all subjects scheduled to be discussed. Among those people coming to Bentonville the last weekend of April, Jonathan Wolfe, a musician and composer. You've likely heard his work. He wrote more than 40 TV show themes, including the one for Seinfeld, and for dozens of other shows, he was the episodic music composer, producing whatever musical elements a particular show needed inside the program. This spring, I reached Jonathan Wolfe at his home in Louisville, Kentucky, and asked him about his career. He says he began in Hollywood as, his words, a multi-purpose utility musical tool for studios.
My job descriptions included, I was a studio musician, an accompanist, an arranger, a recording engineer, orchestrator, synth programmer, music producer, music copyist, conductor, sketch pianist, music editor, electronic sound designer, party pianist, you know, whatever it was. I did on-set production music consulting, like I taught actors, I coached them for musician and singer roles. If it smelled like music, Kyle, I took that job. And for several years, just about every week, I had music assignments for a couple of TV series on a regular basis, like Fantasy Island and The Love Boat. These TV shows had weekly musical guest stars. My job on these shows was to create the musical arrangements and record tracks for the musical guest stars. There were hundreds of these recording stars that I got to record with, got to work with. Jennifer Holliday, Andy Griffith, Bobby Short, Mickey Gilley, you know, Michelle Phillips, Gary Morris. Wow. It's a long, long list of these folks that I got to record with. But I was not the composer nor the songwriter on these assignments. I had not yet earned that privilege. And then I regularly did similar freelance assignments for episodes on other shows on a per episode basis, like Dallas, Knott's Landing, Falcon Crest, Dynasty, Colby's, Twilight Zone. You know, those were the chores I did before I was able to state I am a composer. And from that point on, I only did shows where my name was at the end and said music by Jonathan Wolfe.
When you're doing the music that's in an episode, do you see the episode first and then line up, or do they just kind of tell you we need something that's a little bit, I don't know, jingly or peppy between these two scenes?
That was generally my discretion, what the music would be like once we established the sound for a show. Producers and directors, they're busy doing other things. They're not really fooling with me much. And in answer to your question about how I get post schedules on TV shows, varied from show to show. Each series has unique musical demands. And sometimes the music for a particular episode might require extra time. If there was a musical sequence, someone singing or dancing, or there's underscore for emotional purposes or comedic purposes. But in general, for a normal episode, I liked one full calendar day between receiving the final cut of an episode and delivering the finished music, which means if I'm to receive the final locked edited picture on a Tuesday, I can schedule for Wednesday the time, equipment, personnel to finish the assignment, to record whatever I need to record, and deliver that episode's music the next day to a Thursday mix.
Wow. That, to the novice, sounds like such a quick turnaround.
Well, some of the music could be done in advance. There were war boards in my music editor's room that listed the assignments. There was one board that said pre-production music, another one that said on stage, another one said post-production. When music needed to be recorded or could be recorded in advance, I would do that. There was, for example, there were times to pre-produce music before they shoot the scenes. For example, when there was on-camera singing or dancing, I needed to create the music recordings far enough in advance so that the other departments, the actors, the dancers, the choreographer, the director, the camera crew, had time to prepare to shoot that scene, like on Seinfeld. You know, that happened pretty right. George's answering machine. You know, he's singing, believe it or not, George isn't at home. I created the instrumental tracks and recorded Jason singing it in advance, and they used that for playback during the audience shoot.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep. I must be out or I pick up the phone.
The photo, Kramer's photo shoot of the semi-naked George.
Right.
You know, I created this sexy, throbbing, erotic dance music for Kramer's boombox. This is not art, folks. This is not cinema. This is yucks. And we had a lot of fun doing it. You know, Rochelle.
Yes.
For the musical Rochelle, and she came out and started singing and had the problem with her shoelace, and we did the Tonya Harding joke, which is suddenly now topical.
Right.
The movie.
At the end, her skate or her shoelace doesn't work. Right.
Yeah, but that's an example of music I would create in advance. The opening song for Rochelle. Yeah, that's my claim to fame. I wrote that. Also, I could record in advance music that would be part of the off-camera background audio for a scripted scene. For example, if there's a scene in a sophisticated country club, I could have cocktail music tinkling on a piano. Or for a jukebox in a raunchy biker bar, might play Nasty Blues. Or in a trendy nightclub, there'd be electronic dance music. I could create those in advance. Those elements would be set aside till the episode for which they were created was ready to add music in post-production during that one-day turnaround. So it wasn't that I had to do everything during that day. After we see the final locked edited picture, my music editor would place those pieces into the episode. Now, during that turnaround was the time for me to compose music scored to picture, like underscore that heightens a dramatic or emotional scene or serves as a comedic device for transition. Okay, Seinfeld again.
Right.
Cinematic action music with Seinfeld chase scenes became a thing on Seinfeld. You know, Jerry's chasing Newman or Kramer, the cable guy's chasing him, George with his geriatric bike gang.
Yes.
These were ridiculous scenes that I scored as if they were serious, dramatic chases. The same with Jerry's dream sequence, Tarantino-esque death scene. You know, when he was, I think there was
stealing
a
cable?
Library. I'm sorry?
I remember he also had one where he was stealing cable and he had a dream that he was shot.
That was the one. Yeah, I was thinking it was an overdue library book, but you're right. It was about the cable stealing. Yeah, and I scored that moment with warped electronica violence music as if it was a real movie. Those were examples of other music besides the transitions that you talked about. And sometimes I had to, like I mentioned, the middle board was about on-set music duties. And we'll stay with Seinfeld. In the episode called The Jimmy, I went down to the set to play the piano accompaniment for Mel Torme in that scene where Mel sang to Kramer because he mistook him for a mentally challenged adult.
He had been to the dentist and his bottom lip was numb. Right, yeah.
All right, Kyle, you pass it. You must be a connoisseur.
I am, yes.
Yeah, we recorded that live in front of the audience, and the mistake I made for that show, I made mistakes all over the place, Kyle. You could chart the course of my career by that long trail of mushroom clouds and blast craters behind me. On that day, I underestimated the volume of the audience laughing and cheering and howling. And because of the distance between the piano and Mel, we couldn't hear each other.
Oh.
I could have arranged for, a slant monitor, a speaker for each of us to hear each other. I just didn't think it was necessary.
It sounds like you were never bored.
No, it was, each of my shows had different musical requirements. Some were busier than others. And as you noted, I did 75 shows. You don't get that number by doing them one at a time. So I usually had between 10 and 14 episodes to deliver every week.
Are you ever like, okay, so now I'm going to do the music that's in King of Queens. Is that, do you have to be in a different frame of mind than, say, I don't know, Will and Grace? Or is it pretty much a job?
A little bit. Because, a little bit. You know, for example, the two you used, King of Queens, and I only did it for one season. I was covering for someone who had a health problem, I think, on King of Queens. It was kind of pop, guitar, jangly acoustics, while Will and Grace was solo piano. King of Queens, it was a band, you know, the bass and drums and guitar. Whereas Will and Grace had a really tight schedule. That day in between delivery and mix that I mentioned that I liked, that never, ever happened for Will and Grace. And I knew that it wouldn't. I'd worked with these guys before. Brilliant writers, nice guys. I loved working for Dave and Max, but they had this habit, Kyle. They would call me from editing and say, yeah, Wolf, we know. We owe you a cut today because we mix tomorrow. But we got a lot of dialogue in this episode, and it's taking us longer in editing. You're not getting a cut, sorry. And I would always tell them the same thing. That's okay, guys. I'll see at the mix. There'll be music. The show will air. It'll be just fine. And they would say, oh, we love you. And this would occur regularly. So when Will and Grace started up and I started seeing those scripts with 48, 52 pages in them, you know, long, thick, dense scripts, which is, by the way, more pages than you can fit a 22-minute episode in. I said to the guys, can we just be practical here? I'm never getting a cut from you guys. You're going to be editing that dialogue up to the last nanosecond. And they said, yeah, that's probably right. And I said, I play piano. I'm really good. How about piano will be the sound of Will and Grace? Kind of like for Seinfeld, it was the bass, and I had a couple other shows on at the time. And I'll just play piano. I can do it in real time. And if necessary, I can do it in real time on the dub stage. How about it, guys? And they said, fine. And then they came over, and I improvised a handful of themes for them to choose from, because that's how the music was going to get created, just me improvising. And they picked one, and that became the theme for Will and Grace.
Wow.
Each show had a little bit different musical approach. And so in a general way, my creative process was like this. I'd lean my head over and music would fall out.
But you make it sound easy, but it can't be that easy.
I had to be leaning over the correct instrument when at the time. So yeah, it was a little bit different. That's not that hard. Even, you know, playing piano's not that hard. You just have to press the correct key at the correct time.
So there we are watching, listening, hearing your music on dozens, scores of shows, and most of us don't know your name. Does that bother you?
No, it's all good. I'm okay with that. I could go to, you know, grocery stores, go on the street, go to wherever I wanted to go. Nobody knew who I was. It was fine. Whereas people who were actually in that spotlight, you know, you got to, you know, those folks have to sign autographs, and it's not always comfortable in the heat of that spotlight. You're probably a local celebrity around where you live, Kyle. You know some of that.
I can be recognized, sure. Yes.
Yeah, but at least you're on the radio.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yes.
Whereas the folks on TV, they can't really, you know, hide behind that facial anonymity. No, it does not bother me at all. I kind of enjoy that. And enough people knew who I was that the folks that mattered, the folks that hired composers, knew who I was.
Jonathan Wolff wrote music for more than 70 primetime TV shows, including the themes for more than 40 of them. He'll be at the Power of Music Festival in downtown Bentonville later this month, along with dozens of other singers, songwriters, and representatives from the music business world. You can learn much more about him at SeinfeldMusicGuy.com. The festival actually begins Thursday night, April 26th. It will run through a gospel brunch that takes place Sunday morning, the 29th. And you can learn all about the festival and the nonprofit it supports, the All Fly Away Foundation, at allflyawayfoundation.org.